Welcome to Amigo Podcast 12.16. I would never, ever, ever say anything negative about John Beilein. But, I mean, going okay. So I just wrote this up, but the thing that jumped out to me from the Northwestern game is the fact that Robbie Hummel in the second half is just talking about this is Northwestern's new reality. Like they came in with the 5-out offense, and Michigan's like, all right, we're going to put our 6'10 Gumby man on Pete Nance. And Robbie Barron and your 13% usage, here's Hunter Dickinson. What can you do with it? And if you go back and you take out the walk-on time where they score 12 points in 7 possessions, Michigan holds Northwestern to 8.4 points per possession, which is
0.84,
thank you. That would have been a little bit of a different game.
That would have been quite a game.
0.84 points per possession, which is their worst of the season by some distance. And, you know, you go into the Juwan Howard era thinking, he's going to have to recruit at a level beyond what Beilein did to have the same level of success, because no one is as good of a basketball coach as John Beilein. And I kind of think we're a year and change into this, and I'm like, it's at least close, right?
I mean, when you're talking about the complete package as a college basketball coach,
just ignore recruiting entirely. Just
okay, I'm going to ignore recruiting entirely then, because otherwise I was going to start saying some dangerous things on this podcast. But as a tactician, he really is, because you have certain level of hopes for him coming from a Miami Heat system that is really, really strong tactically. But you've got Pat Riley there. You've got Eric Spoelstra there. So even though Juwan Howard has been in that program for a long time, you don't know how much that'll necessarily translate once he's the one who has to make the adjustments, run the show, make the calls. And I mean, what he did to Northwestern's offense in terms of using his personnel in a way that completely nerfed what Northwestern normally does, allowed him to keep his best five on the floor pretty much the entire competitive portion of the game. And then, and then just unleash an offense that Northwestern has no chance of stopping. I'm obviously a little having a tough time coming up with words to describe this.
Well,
he's good.
Speaking of making the call, Seth, who should you call if you want some custom apparel?
Well, I was going to say, speaking of people who are the best in their business, we are brought to you by Underground Printing and the Bose Store. You can get started on your custom apparel today at undergroundshirts.com. They're still using the promo code HOLIDAY for 25% off your next purchase. It's also, don't forget, our associate sponsors, who are also the Juwan Howards of their respective industries. That's Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Information Entropy, and the University of Michigan Alumni Association.
So anyway, you add up all the things that Ace was talking about, and you get a 19-point win over Northwestern. That was 28 before some depressing Ken Pom time.
It was too long. It was entirely too long. But there was a nice Chase Howard moment.
There was. But this is a 28-point win over a team that was ranked, a team that has victories over Ohio State, Michigan State, and Indiana. So like a legitimate mid-tier Big Ten team at least. And Michigan just showed them the door. And part of that was the fact that they were hitting threes at a rate that they had not hit earlier this year. but they only finished 12 of 27, so that's 44%. You know, you need to take out a couple of walk-on time attempts in there. But the difference between this three-point performance and what Maryland was doing, which we'll get to, is that in the first half, Michigan was 9 of 17 from three, and Maryland was 9 of 11. And
yeah, yeah. And also these were open.
Right. Which helps. These were all good looks. These were excellent opportunities to score. And then if you backtrack Michigan's three-point percentage to something around their season average, they still win by 20 points. So that's really encouraging.
Yeah, this was not like something happened that, you know, kind of something unusual happened that caused a blowout. We talked about the tactical win on the defensive side. There was also very much a tactical win on offense in terms of Northwestern, from the jump, pretty much commits to double teaming Hunter Dickinson with more frequency and with a wider variety of players than they've double teamed anyone else they've faced so far this season. Inside NU, SB Nation's Northwestern blog, had a very informative piece on this that I put in the game preview, where they'd pretty much just been using Anthony Gaines, their backup wing, to double team, and otherwise were leaving their centers on an island. And instead, they commit to doubling Hunter Dickinson early, and even though Dickinson only scores four points in the first half and doesn't record an assist, that is another like statistical miracle on the assist side, because he gets the ball moving. Northwestern's defense is just bent completely out of shape because they're helping and trying to figure out who to rotate over to, and Michigan is just moving the ball beautifully. And so you get this parade of open threes to the point where Northwestern for an extended period of time breaks out a zone against Michigan, which befuddles Michigan for like maybe a possession or two before they'd start destroying that too. So as Dickinson especially just forces teams to do desperate things, and Michigan is really good at taking advantage of teams moving around, being desperate, having to close out on guys, and that's when you get, you know, Franz Wagner swooping into the lane, Shondi Brown doing the same thing, albeit maybe almost turning it over on the way, and, you know, a lot of guys slashing through and shoveling passes to people for wide open corner threes. So it was so fun to watch.
Yeah, and Dickinson hits a couple of elbow jumpers, which is a thing that we saw in his high school tape, but he hasn't shown in college yet. Those look very smooth. And he finishes with, if this is possible, a quiet 19 points to lead Michigan. Like,
those include a lot of dunks, by the way, those quiet points.
Well, I mean, he actually missed a couple bunnies around the basket. Now, he wasn't going to keep making 90% of his shots not at the rim. I mean, his non-dunk shots at the rim. So there is a little bit of a regression to the mean there, but he still hits 8 of 12 twos, only turns the ball over once despite all the doubling. And as Ace mentions, he just has this gravity that is deforming opposing offenses and allowing everybody else to attack rotations and closeouts.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like I had to lead the recap with him, even though, you know, Franz Wagner is the MVP of this game in terms of individual production, but it's very hard to separate anything any other Michigan player does from Dickinson just being there. And I mean, you can do it. You can tell a little bit when Dickinson comes off the floor, because those minutes, even when they go well for Michigan, do feel like they are on a shakier foundation. And I thought Brandon Johns played pretty well at center in this game. And especially since his one turnover was a moving screen, where those tend to be half on the screener and half on the guard for taking off too quickly. So I thought overall Johns played pretty well. But you still, this is a totally different team when Dickinson is on the floor. Teams have to play him in a totally different way. And it makes it so, I mean, I had been advocating for Shondi Brown to get time in more in place of either Smith or Brooks, kind of in place of both of them sharing the court more often, but with Dickinson out there, it just doesn't matter. And Smith and Brooks are both playing well too. So it's hard to argue with pretty much anything that Juwan Howard is doing. I mean, he played the Terrence Williams, Brandon Johns combo that I do not like, and it worked out great. So,
and you got called out on Twitter the moment it happened too.
Well, you know, I mean, I led with Franz, so it's good that we split it up, because Franz turns in an inverse trillion where he fills up every line of a tempo-free box score. 2 of 5 from 2, 2 of 5 from 3, 4 of 4 free throws, 2 offensive rebounds, 8 defensive rebounds, 5 assists, 1 turnover, 5 blocks, and 2 steals. And 3 of those blocks are on perimeter jumpers. One of those perimeter jumpers was from Miller Kopp, who's 6'7". Like,
and it was an on-ball jumper block, which is like a totally different category from like the flying recovery. It's a crazy thing to be able to do on a regular basis.
And I mean, he gets the key defensive matchup in this game and definitively wins that matchup after Michigan starts icing ball screens, as Matt D pointed out on Twitter. You know, they got Dickinson soloed up against Barron a couple times early. Barron was able to drive. Wagner comes over to help, and that's 2 dunks for Nance. As soon as they start icing that ball screen, he hits a couple of really tough jumpers, and then he's done for the day. So he has 8 points in the first 4 minutes. He has 2 points in the subsequent 36 minutes. He has 1 assist, which is a big deal because Nance is one of their top playmakers as a spread center, and he has 3 turnovers. So,
especially because they went without Bowie for a long time in this game too. So he was expected to initiate more of the offense, and just, they couldn't get anywhere with
it. Just didn't happen. And we've been talking about Franz Wagner's potential as a defender pretty much since he arrived. And it was like, does he have the foot speed to stick with smaller guys? Is he big enough to deal with, you know, larger, like tougher players? And in the Nebraska game, Michigan shut down Teddy Allen by switching Franz Wagner onto him. And we just saw what happened against Northwestern. So I think we're going to stop talking about Franz's defensive potential and talk about him as one of the best defenders in the league.
And also becoming one of the best offensive players in the league, especially if his uptick in three-point shooting starts falling as well. I got curious with some Torvik slicing, as we are wont to do on this website and podcast, and I didn't want to put in too many parameters because the Franz, as we've been talking about, is stuffing the stat sheet so much that you can start cutting things down to where he's the only player left, pretty much no matter how you cut things. So I went to conference only stats and just looked for players who have a defensive rebound percentage higher than 15. Franz is currently at 19. Have an assist rate higher than 15. Franz is currently at 19. And have a block rate higher than 5. Franz is at 5.5. The number one comp to come up was Xavier Tillman last year. And the one after that was Bruno Fernando the previous year.
Wow.
And then the two after that are Travion Williams and EJ Liddell from this year. And the one after that is Ethan Happ as a sophomore. And those are the 5 most comparable Big Ten seasons to what Franz Wagner is doing right now. And obviously Wagner also adds a 3-point shot that none of those guys do, and has a turnover rate that is about half of what all of those guys put up. So I don't know who to compare him to anymore, because no matter how you slice it, you run out of comps like really, really fast.
Yeah, and he's coming on. I mean, he low usage most of the first chunk of the season, but he's at 25, 20, and 22 the past 3 games. He had, a little bit of 3-point inefficiency against Nebraska, so he only checks in with a 113-0 rating. Last 2 games, 147 and 139. If he can maintain this for a couple more games, then I think we're back onto Franz Wagner lottery pick track.
Yeah, I mean, he's 21st in the Big Ten in assist rate, and his turnover rate is like a big man's. It's 8.7. It's like John Teske when he was only finishing plays. It's bananas. And he's also eighth in the Big Ten in block rate. I don't know what to do with this guy. I really don't. If he keeps playing like this, you'd take Michigan from a top four in the Big Ten and possibly contending for the Big Ten title to we start talking about deep NCAA tournament runs here.
Yep. So he's in the middle of making a leap similar to the one that he took right at the end of last year. And everybody was very hyped up to see postseason Franz Wagner, and then they pulled the plug. So you have Dickinson motoring along. You have Wagner coming. You know, Eli Brooks is now thunder dunking once per game.
Second straight game.
And it will never not be a shock. You're always like, I didn't know he could do that. He did that in the last game. I can't remember.
I mean, the bench reacts the same way, too. So clearly, it is not just a thing where, he's doing it every day in practice. Eli's saving a little extra.
They gave him the same reaction they gave Jace Howard for his N1.
They really did. C.J. Barrett got some air on the Maryland dunk. Well,
and then Mike Smith is rounding into form as a guy who is not a 30% usage guy anymore. He's at 17 right now. His three-point shooting is up above 40. He's being selective, but if you can't leave him open because he is a knockdown shooter, as we projected, we thought he would be from Synergy. So, you know, there's not really anybody in the top six who you're like, I don't know if this is really his max level.
And there was some stuff at the beginning of the game where they were just throwing the ball out of bounds, and I think that's contributed to his turnover rate for in conference is over 30.
Yeah, so I mean that is kind of the one issue that stands out here. I feel like that'll improve. He's still a guy who was at Columbia last year. He has not quite reached the level of understanding of just the physical and mental ability to be like, oh right, I'm in the Big Ten now. There are some things that I probably should not be doing anymore. And he's done.
And it's also a team-wide thing because, I mean, Michigan is dead last in the Big Ten in turnover rate. And it's by a decent chunk. But I think part of that is just, you know, even for the returners, this offense has changed a lot from last year. They are running a much wider variety of stuff. So, Hunter Dickinson's presence really changes how you run an offense compared to how you run it when you have Xavier Simpson as your offensive hub. So, and it's year two. I mean, this is when Howard's had a chance to really install what he wants to run instead of doing this kind of hybrid, let's get this beeline thing carrying over.
Yeah, and
with his
and also except deal. For maybe the occasional Isaiah Livers, Jack, this team doesn't take bad shots. And one thing about a bad shot is that a bad shot is very easy to get up without turning the ball over because you're not passing. You're not going to the rack. And Michigan is second in the country in shooting at the rim, and it's not just Hunter Dickinson. You know, Wagner's 80% at the rim. Livers is 69%. Brooks is 80% at the rim. Shaundi Brown is 80% at the rim. So this is an offense that's generating a huge number of great looks at the bucket. And I think the turnover rate is a cost of that because, you know, you're not one of the top teams in terms of three-pointers launched anymore. So there's going to be costs, and Michigan needs to mitigate those, but I think that they're getting pretty good compensation for the fact that they're turning the ball over a little bit too much.
Definitely. I mean, you are going to lose the rock a little bit when you drive and rely less on the three, but it also seems like Michigan is due for some regression in that regard. They are doing completely fine, actually, in the Big Ten in terms of steal rate for opponents. They're only getting the ball stolen on 6.5% of possessions, which is seventh in the Big Ten, but their non-steal turnover percentage is 13.3%, which is dead last. And that's the stuff like just passing it out of bounds or traveling because you pick up your pivot foot while deciding whether or not to take a wide open three in transition, which may have happened in this game. So there's a lot of stuff where it's just like Michigan seems like they're just a tiny bit out of sorts in terms of running the offense, and that stuff is going to come down, and then you'll hopefully get more of a middle of the Big Ten pack turnover rate that's in line with the live ball turnovers that they're committing.
Yeah. One other personnel kind of discussion from this game, Shaundi Brown has now reached the freshman Zach Irvin level of if he gets a look from the outside, it's going up. And he's knocking him down at 40%. So this isn't a complaint, right? But, it's one of those things where there are certain kinds of players whose possession is much lower, their usage is much lower than the percent of shots that they get up. And there's a 5-point gap on Sean D. Brown right now. So he's beginning to feel like a gunner.
Well, that'll happen coming out of a game when you have 10 shooting possessions in 16 minutes. That is what we call some efficient shot chucking. And he did almost get out a little bit too much over his skis when he attacks a closeout and practically dribbles the ball off of both of his knees and then manages to collect it and get a layup because things are going real well for him right now. I like his aggressiveness, especially since his outside shot is going down with such a frequency that attacking those closeouts is generally getting him a layup or a good look or drawing a foul. I love the way he's playing because we've talked so much about his defense, but he gets another half-court steal in this game where Bubui tries to take him off the dribble and ends up hurting himself and losing the ball. Which is just kind of how it goes when you're trying to attack Shondi Brown one-on-one.
And he got a technical for that, by the way.
He did a chin-up on the rim. You can't do that.
Yeah, it's legitimate. It is in the rule book. The rule book sucks. And the refs may want to, maybe selectively enforce rules that suck. I know.
I mean, but, you could have called it on Eli,
no, because he didn't.
After his thunder.
He didn't pull himself up.
No, that was just his momentum. Yeah. Eli just swings because he has to jump so hard to get to the rim that, but when he grabs onto it, he has to stop himself
like
from launching
Shondi Brown's
space.
Knees got above the backboard. That's when they call it.
That's cool.
Yeah,
it's cool.
MG got a very cool photo that could be put directly into the NCAA manual for
it's a Class B technical, so it's not a personal foul. It's only one shot. And Michigan was up 26, so go off, young man. But it's a tech, right?
Yeah. And also, they shot the tech during the commercial break, and the announcers weren't present.
Confusion,
which led to some temporary confusion about whether the technical.
I mean,
was
I heard it
called.
Go in, and I was like, "Why didn't they put that on the screen?"
I was looking at the live stats and was very confused because things were happening that they weren't showing.
They were apparently looking at KenPom's win percentage and trying to figure out why that doesn't equate to winning 9-2 or 9-11
games. That's rough. That's you can't add up percentages. That's Robbie Humble's a great color commentator, but I was like, come on, man, come on.
It was God, there was it reminds me of NBC, I think, showed a graphic during that absolutely horrific tank game that I tuned into in the fourth quarter out of morbid curiosity last night. And they got halfway there with the fourth down decision-making charts. They showed the increase or decrease in win probability for a, go-for-it field goal, go-for-it make it, go-for-it miss it field goal choice. But they didn't show the likelihood of each outcome. And it was you're getting there, but it just led to this extremely stupid discussion instead, because you're missing half of the equation, and that's where I feel like we're at with analytics in sports right now. At least when it comes to getting them on broadcasts, is when they do arrive, you tend to get them in kind of a half baked form.
I kind of mentioned this earlier, but Isaiah Livers is taking a number of I got to get mine shots, I guess I would say, and I feel like he just needs to take the threes that are there and not because he's a 40% career 3-point shooter. And he definitely had a turnover in this game where he turned down an open three and drove into two guys. And if the lane's open, sure, go ahead. But that's a great shot. Just take the shot.
Yeah. Especially since he's also, hitting step in mid rangers, hitting stare down revenge mid-range fadeaways out of post-ups.
Just took over an entire possession, and I'm like, all right, you hit that. But if you don't hit it, what's the chance of an offensive rebound? Pretty much nothing.
I was okay with that because Michigan was up by a lot, and Robbie Barron had stared him down after a transition dunk for no reason when Northwestern was down 20. So post that punk up and hit a fadeaway in his face and then look at him, which is exactly what Livers did.
Fine.
I loved it.
I do
feel you that when Livers has a remotely good look from three, he should be putting that up instead of trying to go off the drive. But in general, I mean, he's got a 122 O rating. His turnover rate is only 15. His shooting slash lines are 59, 40, 96 right now. His is for, so he's posting a 122 O rating. Like, it's really hard. I mean, I know we got to find things to nitpick. And
it could be 130.
Yeah, you know, and it could
that
be.
That turnover rate is up 7 points.
That's true. But.
You did say at the beginning of the year that his turnover rate needs to go up.
Not this much.
His assist rate has gone up, too. He's doing a better job of moving the ball.
Also, I thought that this team would have more trouble generating shots.
I did as well.
Hunter Dickinson changes the equation there, and you know, we're talking about a team that is generating an insanely large number of great looks. So in that context, I don't need Isaiah Livers to his turnover rate and assist rate to go up. I just need him to shoot the great shots.
Yeah, one of the both encouraging and frustrating things about this team right now is a pretty healthy portion of their turnovers feel pretty boneheaded, and which hopefully means they're easily excised. But they are hard to watch in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are occasional stretches of play where you're just like, but the overall context where Michigan is running a blizzard of different actions, many of them specifically targeted at what the opposition is trying to do to you. Matt D. pointed out Hunter Dickinson's first points of the game, a post-up where Michigan went into a horn set briefly, which was essentially just cover for a middle-of-the-court post-up where they couldn't double. And you just watch these things, and you're like, oh, that's so good. Like, all of the things that you catch on film, like, after going over these games, you're just like, that is, I love that. It's like watching, you know, the fullback pop pass. It's just like, you get that a lot for this team, where you're just like, that is a really cool way to attack what they're doing.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of football coaches about this kind of stuff, and I imagine it's the same with basketball, that most coaches have most of these ideas. Like, the coaches have seen this stuff. They've gone to, you know, they've gone through playbooks. They've seen it all. It's a question of how much can you teach your guys? And then that's really a question of, like, how good of a teacher are you? And that was one of the things that we liked about Juwan as a coaching candidate, that, like, he seemed like a guy who's a good teacher. But to see that translating into teaching these skills and teaching these parts of the offense, that's like a, you know, that's fourth page of the offense, that's like deep into the playbook kind of stuff, and they're doing that, you know, the beginning, we're still like in the, you know, early part of the Big Ten season of his second year, which is pretty early, especially with like a transfer point guard and a true freshman center, like, and you're getting them to run actions that are that deep in the playbook. That speaks to his teaching.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and talk about Michigan's other pretty offensive game this week.
We're in the home stretch of 2020, and New Year's is right around the corner. What better way to ring in the new year with some great custom apparel? Our friends at Underground Printing have you covered with awesome custom tees and hoodies and low, affordable prices. They also have tons of great Michigan apparel that you can proudly wear to support the maize and blue. Get started on your custom apparel order today on a much better year at undergroundshirts.com and use the promo code HOLIDAY for 25% off your next purchase.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Hey, so I have, like, insurance and stuff, but I don't really, like, know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance, and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks,
and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also, like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually, like, reads MGo Blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those, too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together, and you will save money on your insurance, and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life, too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
This is a special message from our friends at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown. All of our best to the MGo Blog family, and a special thanks to the medical community, healthcare workers, emergency personnel, and all essential workers that are keeping our world going. We miss you all. Hope everyone is staying safe, healthy, and home.
Michigan 84, Maryland 73, another game where Michigan ran out to a big lead, and then the opposition was able to reel it back a little bit in the last 5 minutes. This one, on the other hand, was close for a long time. It was a three-point ball game with 10 minutes left, largely because Maryland was absolutely out of their mind in the first half, going 9 of 11 from 3, as mentioned, on looks that were mostly decent to good, but not I'm going to shoot 9 of 11 from 3. And even though they cool off in the second half, they still shoot 59% for deep from the game. And that's a situation where 95% of the time you're just going to go home bitching about randomness and taking the loss. But Michigan is able to shoot 75% from 2 in a 1.25 points per possession performance and eventually run away and hide from the Terrapins.
Yeah, to get an 11-point road win out of a game where you're minus 7 in three-pointers and in three-pointers made while taking only three fewer, it's just, I mean, once again, we have to start with Hunter Dickinson because he scores 26 points and goes 10 for 11 from the field and 6 for 7 from the line and pulls down 4 offensive rebounds to do it.
Also got a bad technical.
That one was bad.
Yeah, he then would flex at Maryland's bench after.
He didn't even flex. He just looked.
He would either look or do the little like low arm flex that he is starting to make a bit of his signature.
Doing his private
pile. Which in football we have learned it's very important. Keep the arms low on the flex and you avoid the penalties. So I feel like Hunter Dickinson, you know, if the NCAA is trying to stay consistent here, this should be totally fine. But, you know, there's a bit of a perceived slight between him and Maryland because he feels that Maryland did not recruit him very hard, in part because Maryland has failed to recruit DeMatha, the biggest talent producer in Maryland, for like 2 decades, which is pretty wild. So Hunter Dickinson decides this is a revenge game, and that really sucks for Maryland because their only big man who's bigger than 6'9" is a dude who like really does not know how to play basketball yet, and is also pretty skinny. So no matter who they put on Dickinson, he just absolutely feasts.
The Maryland bloggers' response to that too was quite delightful, I must say. They're really mad at Hunter. They're not mad at Maryland for not recruiting DeMatha. They're mad at Hunter Dickinson for pointing it out.
Dude, the 24/7 premium Maryland message board is wild.
They threw out a conspiracy theory about, I believe, Dickinson's ties to the Ukrainian war, I think is what it was. That one, that's like past some red cedar level stuff.
I did not know that, like, Maryland fans went that hard.
I respect it though. I mean,
there is that one video of the girl crashing the beer can and then taking it down. Like I could see her, you know, being on the lookout for Ukrainian mobs.
We got to remember that this is not a port over from ACC football culture. This is ACC basketball culture and ACC basketball message board culture, and that is on a different level from whatever Maryland is bringing on the football side of things. That is when the Ukrainian mob tie allegations come out. And,
That's true. Duke really is kind of embedded with Putin.
So this game features Maryland going 50% at the rim. That is not a good number. Everyone who gets on the court except Mike Smith gets a block. Eli Brooks volleyball spikes a guy. You know, Shondi Brown came over and deleted a dude. This was another game where even though Maryland got up to 42% from two, it just felt like anytime you were attacking the rim against Michigan, it was just really tough sledding.
Yeah, Michigan is now first in the Big Ten in block rate, which is a thing that absolutely boggles my mind after however many years of Beeline being here. It's wild to watch. Maryland did have an above-average two-point shooting performance against Michigan because Michigan is also first in the Big Ten in two-point defense, allowing 39% right now, which is just ludicrous. So you get Ayala and Wiggins and Hakeem Hart, you know, they might start attacking the basket, but generally you're pulling up at some point because the idea of trying to get all the way there when Dickinson is looming, and you've also got Wagner and Livers and Shondi Brown able to recover for blocks, or Eli Brooks apparently turning into this pretty nice weak side help block guy. Like, he's had a couple pretty spectacular recovery blocks this season that we'd probably be talking about more if he didn't keep shocking us with two-handed dunks off the baseline. But this is just it's a crazy team to watch on both ends. Brandon Johns is walled up for either blocks or rim stops that aren't credited as blocks a couple times in the last two games. He gets credited for a block in this one. And what also strikes me is just how different this game was for Michigan. I mean, they only make six threes in this game. They only play seven players, and Brandon Johns only plays 10 minutes. So this is, for most of it, a six-man rotation where Shondi Brown doesn't score a point. And you still get more than enough scoring out of this team. Even when they're not shooting three-pointers, they're still putting up 1.25 points per possession. I don't know how you game plan for this team.
No. I mean,
I'm glad I'm not a Big Ten basketball coach because that seems really, really hard. I don't think that Mark Turgeon or Chris Collins necessarily did the best possible job of game planning against Michigan these last two games, but I also don't necessarily see an area that I can point to and be like, you should have done better here.
No. And one of the things that kind of leapt out in a coaching department in this game is that Michigan goes on this big second half run, and they're in a 2-3 zone for a big portion of it. Now, they haven't run much zone this year, and Maryland was so hot from three that putting out a zone against it seemed like a crazy decision.
You want to give Dante Scott more chances to shoot over your guys?
And they hit a fairly well-contested three on the first 2-3 possession, but they stick with it, and those are probably the best contested threes of the night. Maryland throws the ball away a couple of times, and they just kind of get stuck looking at this zone they can't do anything with. They go six straight possessions without a bucket after that three, and Michigan is gone at that point. So, you know, we're talking about the Franz switch in the Northwestern game. This game also had a coaching decision that worked out really well and saw Michigan separate from a top 50 KenPom team.
Yeah, I mean, yet another example of Juwan Howard breaking tendency to do something that ends up winning a game. I'm looking at the synergy page right now, and even with that Maryland game baked into numbers that, you know, are still a relatively small sample, Michigan's only run zone defense on 3.8% of their possessions this season. And I have to imagine most of those are after timeouts, because that's usually when Howard deploys that. And he might leave them in a zone for a possession or two after a timeout, but it generally doesn't go on this long. And when, you know, Maryland comes out and gets a bucket immediately after Michigan goes zone, I was fully expecting them to go back to man. And instead, he sticks with it. It works. He does it in a way where, you know, you're kind of buying some rest for your players on that end in a game where you're basically playing six guys. To be able to do that and not only tread water, but do well and go on a run with it. They can't have spent that much practice time on zone defense, considering how infrequently they break it out, but that they're able to do it and perform it well against a pretty decent team. Another feather in Howard's cap, I guess. But man, he's running out of space for feathers.
Well, I think part of it is, so Jarius Hamilton, it goes 3 of 5 in this game, and he's a career 30% three-point shooter. They have this three-pointer where Franz gets driven, Dickinson comes out to help, and Hamilton is absolutely all alone at the three-point line. And I think going to the 2-3 is like, all right, well, if that guy's going to be shooting against us like this, not really scared of Maryland's offensive rebounding, not really scared of them driving against the zone. So let's put the 2-3 out there. Dickinson won't have to go out to the edge and cover, and then we're going to be able to really overplay the three-point line. And that worked out really well. And the kind of inventiveness isn't quite the right word, but, you know, if there's something a little bit strange in both of these coaching moves. So to see that their idea is worth trying is something that I think is really impressive.
Yeah, he has been counterintuitive in a way that has been very successful, and I imagine is hard to cook up a game plan for and adjust to mid-game, because Howard has also been good at in-game adjustments. We mentioned in the Northwestern section the icing ball screens shutting down their main way to attack on offense. That happened within 3 minutes. And this Maryland game was another example of just, the zone changeup allows Michigan to pull away. That happens in a matter of minutes. And by the time Turgeon has a chance to really counter, it's really hard to come back against this team, because you can't score inside the arc against them. It's actually, you have a better chance of making a 3 than a 2 against this team right now, literally.
Well, and these are both interesting teams to try to game plan against. Like, we've been talking about how Michigan's a little difficult to strategize for, but Maryland is like a team full of not just the shooters, right? Like, guys who like are looking to drive but can also get out there and shoot. And then Northwestern's kind of changed up their whole strategy where they'll, you know, it's almost like a mid-major strategy where they go 5 out. They'll try to run down and look for a shot. If they don't get their first action, they'll just put it up. And those are not the easiest teams to game plan for. Like, there's an opportunity there to, like, run Dickinson off the court, right, if he's going to have to be challenging threes all the time outside. And for him to have strategies that no one really thought of all year against either of these teams is really impressive.
Well, and the other thing that kind of leaps out about Michigan's two-point defense is that they're amongst the best teams in the country at not putting other people on the line. So Maryland gets a total of 6 free throws. You know, Northwestern gets up 12, but they're the number one team in the Big Ten at preventing free throws. They're in the top 30 nationally, and that's with this incredibly suffocating two-point defense. So that combination is extremely unusual, I have to imagine. Like, you can get teams like Wisconsin are able to pull it off, but, you know, for Juwan Howard to be able to pull this off in year two without, I mean, Yaklich and Donlin did change the culture on Michigan a little bit, but this isn't like the same system that Michigan's been running for 20 years like it is in Madison, right? So to have that double whammy of a top 5 two-point defense and a top 30 free throw prevention defense is really incredible.
Yeah, they're going to get tested on that too this week, because Minnesota's the next team, and they have 4 guys on KenPom's leaderboard for free throw rate. Like, that's a team that's going to get to the line a lot, and they get their shooters to the line. So, Maryland was a good test, I think, for Minnesota. It was like an upgraded version of that. And if they can handle Maryland without getting their guys in foul trouble. That's looks pretty good for shutting off one of the main resources for Maryland for Minnesota coming up.
Yeah, we'll talk more about Minnesota in our Around the League segment. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and I bet Ace is going to bring up a guy named Soup.
Win or lose this season, stop in to Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the Big House and accessible to ages 21+, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
We're in the home stretch of 2020 and New Year's is right around the corner. What better way to ring in the new year with some great custom apparel? Our friends at Underground Printing have you covered with awesome custom tees and hoodies and low affordable prices. They also have tons of great Michigan apparel that you can proudly wear to support the maize and blue. Get started on your custom apparel order today on a much better year at undergroundshirts.com and use the promo code HOLIDAY for 25% off your next purchase.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's
73-945-9693. You're supposed to have the hot sauce after the segment, Brian.
1 second. I need takes from you that are hotter than Donta Scott, who has a 140 rating for, if you need to know.
Good Lord.
In case you didn't remember the basketball game against Maryland. Seth, give me your hottest take.
Basketball should be tracking hockey assists. Or at least like initiators. The Hunter Dickinson stat needs to be up there. And they have so many great things. They know where the shots came from. They can do heat checks. You can do all sorts of great things with basketball stats. And the one thing they're not tracking is who's the initiator on the offense every single time.
It's worse. They almost certainly are tracking it. And it's just not publicly available because they're tracking everything.
Well, it would be difficult to make that, I think, a meaningful stat.
It is. It'd be more meaningful for certain positions than others. Like, Yeah.
So,
yeah. And
well, the one thing that bothers me about basketball play-by-play stats is that they'll be like, okay, this is a dunk, and this is at the rim. But they won't tell you, like, this is a floater, or, like, this is a... Like, I feel like that would be pretty easy to, like, just have the scores. This is a floater, this is a spot-up, and then you could do a lot more with the box scores, like, with that. I just
want everyone who assisted to be included in the assists. They can put it in the box score. They could... It's just adding one more line. Assisted by Mike Smith and... Hunter Dickinson.
Ace, I need your hottest take.
Tom Izzo is going to resign in disgrace at the end of this season.
That's impossible.
So Michigan State has, first of all, net ratings came out today.
I think they're 118.
They're 118. Michigan's top 10. That's all you need to know. I'm putting together the like Big Ten reset for this week. In their KenPom Torvik average national rank, they've dropped 21.5 spots just in the last week. They're now projected to go either 7-13 or 8-12 in conference, depending on which site you look at, depending on which one has kept more of their preseason expectations in. Because if you strip those out, they look exceptionally bad. And when you watch them play, they look exceptionally bad. And then you also factor in that his great recruiting class is not actually going to come.
Yeah, I just feel like Tom Izzo is going to die on the sidelines.
I mean, that's probably going to happen, but this is a segment for hot takes.
Yeah, I disagree that he will resign in shame, but there could be one of those things where, like, the school wants to fire him, and they're talking about a contract forever, and then they're all waiting out the NBA to see if they'll take him off their hands, and...
I mean, the last time there was an NCAA tournament, they were in the Final Four. So I feel like he's got a little bit more runway.
I mean, he's got a lot of it. It would entirely be just Tom Izzo going, you know what? This might not actually get much better, and I don't want to ruin my legacy. I'm out.
The only way I can see any of this transpiring if Tom Izzo goes full Woody Hayes on, let's say, Adrian Nunez.
he wouldn't do it on Adrian Nunez. He'd do it on Aaron Henry.
That's
it's not happening on his own guy. Or it's not happening on another guy. It's happening on his own guy. He's Bobby Knighting it. He's not Woody Hazing it.
That's the only way. Otherwise, Tom Izzo
will
be
a
withered
table.
Husk. don't you want him to stick around if Michigan's gonna be this good?
Look.
And just watch him eat his liver for 12 years?
Michigan State's gonna continue to be this bad? Absolutely. I mean, I will take both, but
I feel like
I had to come up with a hot take. I had to come up with a hot take.
Cutting it a little early for the
disgrace.
Demise of Michigan
State.
Disgrace take. But
I mean, he should have resigned in disgrace already, but
there's your hot take. My hot take is backup center Franz Wagner.
I mean, all his comps now are like Xavier Tillman and Bruno Fernando, so I don't even know if this is hot anymore.
Okay, so who is this not going to work against? It's not going to work against Purdue. It's not going to work against Iowa. It's not going to work against Illinois. Who is it going to work against? Rutgers, probably, because Miles Johnson is not really a prolific scorer, back-to-the-basket guy.
Also just going to foul
State.
Franz like four times.
Ohio State, they top out at like 6'8". They got some back-to-the-basket guys, but they just got overwhelmed by length against Minnesota. I think it'll work against Wisconsin.
Both?
I'm fine with like those guys trying to post up against Franz a little bit. Like,
wouldn't mind
not,
that. I also wouldn't mind in Indiana, Trace Jackson Davis.
Jackson Davis, I think, would give it to him.
I mean, it'd be tough, but that'd be the test because he's like they're built similarly.
But Maryland, I think it would work in the rematch against Maryland.
Minnesota's a no-go. Liam Robinson,
Minnesota's
is big and good.
Penn State, maybe like John Harrar or Trent Buttrick really isn't going to give you a ton of post offense, and then the offense with Franz at the five. Hey, now.
I mean, we've been trying to figure out ways to get all these wings on the court. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Although I still like Brandon Johns. I don't want Brandon Johns to get cut out of the rotation.
Well, if you do this, you can play Brandon Johns at the four more where he's more comfortable.
That's true.
I don't actually expect this or want this to happen. This is very much a hot take, but it is plausible.
Plausible hot take.
Plausible hot take. All right, if you'd like us to continue doing this extremely strange and silly segment, please get some Fuego Box. Fuego Box will send you 3 hot sauces a month, chosen for flavor, not merely heat. Go to fuegobox.com/mgoblog for $10 off your first month. After months, nay years, of no movement on a Jim Harbaugh extension, we've entered the new year. We still don't know what's happening. And today, Toledo sports reporter Jordan Strack tweets, "A source tells me Jim Harbaugh has been actively working to find an NFL job. That is the number one thing holding him up on signing an extension at Michigan, and that his desire right now is certainly to return to the NFL." That...
It's real interesting, and the source of it is particularly interesting.
So Jordan Strack is based in Toledo, and a guy named Matt Campbell was the Rockets head coach for 3 or 4 years before he went to Iowa State. So Strack has been on point with various Matt Campbell takes for years now. I think he's a very reliable reporter, especially in this regard.
He broke Matt Campbell going to Ohio State from Toledo, or going to Iowa State from Toledo.
Yeah, Michigan fans know him, too. Strack, by the way, is also the guy who asked Brady Hoke the question that led to For God's Sakes.
Well, that's special, Seth. Thank you for bringing
that
up.
Too. People were like, who's this Jordan Strack guy? I'm like, he's been around the Michigan program for years.
But Strack is extremely reliable, especially in this, which I would describe as his wheelhouse. And I wouldn't be surprised if Jordan Strack's source was connected to Matt Campbell in some way, which would imply that if Harbaugh finds an NFL job and goes back off to the league, that Michigan has at least been in contact with Matt Campbell. Now, whether that means they'll hire him is a different situation. I think you do hire the guy who beat Oregon in a New Year's Day bowl at Iowa State.
I don't think there's any question about like a guy who did that well at Iowa State with Ohio connections. I mean, I've made my opinion know well enough, but I think he'd be Michigan's top target, just period. I don't think there's much question about it. There was also Stephen Godfrey, who's also relatively plugged into the national coaching landscape, teased me with a little emoji reaction to me mentioning Matt Campbell to Michigan. So it feels like there's a little bit of smoke there. And what I keep coming back to is something I've been saying for what feels like ages now, which is that Michigan screwing this up and Michigan pulling this off pretty much perfectly is going to look pretty much the same until the ink is dry. And the thing that both is the easiest explanation for why this has taken so long, and the one that makes Ward Manuel seem the most competent, and I think Ward Manuel has proven his competence both at Michigan and in his previous stops, is that there's a low ball offer out there and Harbaugh doesn't particularly like it. And we are recording this on Black Monday in the NFL. This is when NFL jobs are really starting to open up. You know, we have known that the Jets were not going to have Adam Gase around for a long time, but today was the day that Adam Gase actually finally got fired. And now NFL teams can start bringing in coaches to interview. The Rooney Rule is in place, so NFL teams do not just immediately turn around and hire somebody the next day, because then it becomes obvious that they had somebody picked ahead of time and didn't interview any non-white people usually. This isn't going to move immediately, but we should find out hopefully relatively soon whether any of this is true, because while this stuff doesn't move right away, it does tend to move.
Yeah, and it'll be maybe a week or two, but every day that Jim Harbaugh doesn't sign an extension is an indication that if he gets an NFL job offer, I would assume that he takes it. And that he is looking for.
And just the idea that he's been like sitting in San Diego or California, wherever he is on vacation right now, not actively doing anything about this just like very urgent program situation that's going on, it just doesn't really seem to track with like common sense, like just how this would be going.
I mean, what has changed with this news? Like, from the very beginning, I thought the most rational thing for Michigan to do was to offer Harbaugh a contract with a very low buyout. And if he wants to, you know, be a coach at will, fine, we're happy with that. If things don't go well, we can get rid of him. Just can't be in the situation that you were in this year where you can't fire the guy without a huge buyout and you can't afford it. You don't want it unless you have some guy like Texas who comes along and will pay ungodly sums to get you Sarkisian for some reason. Anyway, the only thing that's really changed now is that people are now aware, if they weren't before, that Harbaugh desires an NFL job. What I'm afraid of is now what happens if there isn't one. And I know the NFL will take anybody sometimes, but...
You know. Brian Schottenheimer.
I was about to say literally the exact same thing. Brian Schottenheimer.
Yes, but let's say there is no one willing to take Jim Harbaugh
right now. Adam
Gase
has had 3 head coaching jobs.
They could take anybody. That means they could also turn down anybody. Like
Harbaugh went to the NFC Championship game 3 times in 4 years.
Man, I'd be fine with Jim Harbaugh as the Lions pick.
The Houston Texans gave Bill O'Brien the keys to their entire franchise and let him drive it off a cliff.
That was fun. I think that the NFL is too wild to guess what they're going to do. And if they don't pick up Harbaugh, and then he does sign the contract, now we've got a coach that everyone knows was shopping himself around the NFL this year.
I mean, at this point, if Michigan is bringing back Harbaugh, I think we're all pretty bummed out, and it's not going to go great no matter what. So, but we're up to 6 head coaching jobs open at the moment, and one thing that I think is going to play to Jim Harbaugh's advantage with some of these is that, the Chargers job just opened up today. That's a job with a young mobile quarterback who... the NFL still remembers what Harbaugh did with Colin Kaepernick in terms of scheming up offenses and making a quarterback who maybe didn't fit the previous prototype into kind of what has now become the new prototype. The NFL is really moving towards guys who can at least throw on the move and be somewhat of a threat on the ground. Justin Herbert is that with the Chargers. You've got the Jets with a young quarterback there and Sam Darnold if they want to commit to him or bring in a new guy in the draft. Jaguars job open. Trevor Lawrence is going to be there. The Falcons and Lions might also be starting out a new quarterback depending on how things go. And the Texans have Deshaun Watson. I think that's every job that's open right now. So Harbaugh, I think, might be perceived as a pretty decent fit in the NFL. And all it takes is one front office. So we'll see where it goes. But I'm not just saying this because I want it to happen. I think NFL teams could do a lot worse than hiring Jim Harbaugh right now.
So is there any reason to discuss coaching options if Harbaugh does go to the NFL? Or is it just Matt Campbell end of story?
That's how it is for me.
I know how it is for you.
No, but it does seem like Campbell is the obvious first option. There are so many different people who all seem to be saying the same thing about Luke Fickle, which is that he just would not be interested. And he's enough of a Buckeye where I believe it. And at that point, I think it's pretty obvious who your top target in the country should be. And I don't see why Campbell wouldn't come from Ames to Ann Arbor. So at that point, I think it's kind of you shoot your shot. You've probably put out feelers already. And I mean, they'd better, if they're at all competent, they know whether or not they're going to get a yes before any of this goes down. So, and like I said, I'm working upon the assumption of competence with Ward Manuel. So if that's the case, I think it should be a pretty straightforward search if Jim Harbaugh leaves.
All right. We're going to take a break and take a look around the league.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
This is Matt Demarest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them. You should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's HOMESURE lending.com/MGOBlog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Other things have happened in the Big Ten, other than Michigan demolishing people. How about Minnesota demolishing people? They just came off a win against Ohio State that was 77-60. They are our next opponent, so it's a good time to take a look at them. And this is a game in which Ohio State shot 35% from two. Their previously extremely effective but undersized center combination of Zed Key, Kyle Young, and EJ Liddell went 5-for-17 from the floor. Ooh. As Liam Robbins went for 27 by getting to the free throw line 17 times and put up 5 blocks with 6 offensive rebounds. Robbins has had kind of an up and down season, but he's almost maintained his usage from Drake and actually upped his O rating 10 points. His block rate is number 1 in the Big Ten. He's the rare up transfer for where you watch him a couple times and you're just like, yes, this guy should have been in the Big Ten from the drop.
Yeah, he's also drawing the most fouls in the league. I mean, he's been the second most dominant post presence in the Big Ten, I would say, at least in terms
he's
of purely
probably
paint.
Third.
Trace Jackson Davis has been very good, just in a different way that is less paint bound, I guess.
I mean,
for traditional big style. Like, if we just limit it to like the traditional bigs,
You've got,
which I guess then cuts it down to like 4 guys. But I'm cheating. Oh, but you got Kofi Coburn.
You got Kofi. You got Garza.
This is a really Jackson good league. Never mind. He's like the 4th or 5th best, but it's only because this league is insane.
Hunter, there are 4 Big Ten bigs in the third. Sorry, there are 3 Big Ten bigs in the KenPom Player of the Year standings.
And then Ron Harper Jr., who's like 240 pounds.
Actually, Harper dropped out, but Marcus Carr is
out?
Now number 10. Yeah.
Oh, good Lord. This league is ridiculous. Yeah, so they're going to provide certainly an interesting test for Dickinson, who hasn't faced a guy who's both pretty much as big as him and also
good at
basketball. Yeah, so that's a tougher test than what they've normally faced. Carr is a guy who is very difficult to contain off the dribble, so that's going to be big for Mike Smith and Eli Brooks. Although we could see Gabe Kelscher has not been good the last 2 years at shooting, which does makes him kind of an offensive negative for them. And he's only 6'4". So there's a chance, particularly when you break Shondi Brown into the game, that maybe you just unleash Brown on Carr and stick Brooks or Smith as kind of your designated off-ball.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely
wave a hand in his face on Kelscher.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, hope that Minnesota ends up having to run their offense through Both Gotch, because that'd be fun. I'm rooting for that.
Booth. Everyone calls him Booth.
Yeah, I mess it up every time. It's like Booth Gotch, I think.
Booth Gotch, which is just more evidence that he should be the disaster factory of the year, because his name is strange.
And his season-long numbers aren't bad, but then you dig into his Big Ten-only numbers, and he's putting up a shooting line of 26, 27, and 63 with a turnover rate of 21. So yeah, it's bad when your turnover rate is creeping up on your effective field goal percentage. Well,
and this is our leader in the clubhouse too, just because he's got that Leroy Jenkins.
He has mode of flair.
Yes. He has flair on both ends of the court too. I mean, he can make plays on both ends for both teams. He is an all around factor. I love Booth Gotch. He is Jacob Young's spiritual heir, and I am a big fan.
He makes his free throws, and he gets to the line a lot, so he can get.
He's not a complete negative. Disaster Factory does not necessarily mean you are a terrible player. Jacob Young played his way out of it.
I'm just saying, like playing this guy can get annoying. Like if he's collecting fouls, like flailing around after these ridiculous shots, it's like. Yeah.
They also have another Disaster Factory candidate, and Jamal Mashburn Jr. just wanted to throw that out there. He chucks.
Yeah, if he gets his usage up, he will be a strong, strong candidate.
And if we go by shot percentage, he already qualifies because he's at 21.5% there.
So I just want to point out what happened for Ohio State against Nebraska, where they absolutely demolished the Hoosiers. In that game, Kyle Young's 3-4 from 2, Liddell's 2.
Wait, Nebraska and Hoosiers? I'm confused.
I'm sorry, Nebraska and Ohio State, sorry. So this is the previous game for Ohio State. Zed Key goes 5-5 from the floor, and Liddell's 2-4. Zed Key gets to the line 6 times. So this is a team that's really shown that if you put them up against bigs that are about their size, that they're going to go to work and do really well. But, that Rutgers game where Miles Johnson fouls out and Rutgers goes from almost certainly going to win this game to like a 22-0 run against them, I think is Ohio State this year in a nutshell. They don't have enough playmaking on the outside to not rely on their bigs, and their bigs aren't big enough to actually go up against, the Robinses and the Garzas maybe of the world, let alone Trace Jackson Davis. I think they're just going to get crushed by Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't even had particularly difficult tests for the most part in the post so far, and they're not doing great when they face reasonable ones. Travion Williams had a KenPom MVP performance against them, albeit when they didn't have Liddell. But Liddell's 6'7". So it seems like Michigan's a really bad matchup for them. I'll go ahead and say that. I don't know what the heck they're going to do against Hunter Dickinson. So there are a few teams where it feels like there are some kind of either kind of cracks in the foundation a little bit, or just certain things that aren't necessarily going to be sustainable. And for me, Ohio State, with their size or lack thereof, I just don't know if they're going to end up hitting the 10-win conference projection that they're getting right now.
Yeah, and the other team that kind of stands out to me is in some trouble is Purdue. They've lost 3 of their last 4. Their most recent one was a 66-58 loss to Illinois. That was a 69-possession game. So they did well on the defensive end, but they scored 8.4 points per possession. And I watched most of this game, and it's just really hard for Purdue to generate anything that's not a post touch. Like Travion Williams gets up a bunch of shots. They're able to get it into Edie, and he'll be able to score okay. But none of their perimeter guys are taking good shots ever, except for the 2 or 3 times a game they're able to get Stefanovic open for a 3.
Yeah,
I mean,
Sorry, go ahead.
This is a team where the post matchup pretty much determines the game. Play Iowa, lose by a lot. Play Illinois, lose by a fair amount. Play Rutgers, lose by 5. Play Maryland, win by 3. Like, I mean, that is also their home and away splits, but I just don't think home and away is playing that much of a factor this year.
Yeah, they also have a win over Ohio State, which kind of goes back to the post matchup.
Oh yeah, I skipped right over that. So yeah, that's a team that post matchups very very much seem to be determining their success, and that's a tough way to play in the Big Ten. They have the number 12 conference only offense right now, and it's like a pretty big gap behind number 11 Indiana. They're lingering down almost exactly where Michigan State is right now, and that's not really where you want to be.
The story with Purdue this year was, you know, they were without Eric Hunter, I think, for the first like 4 or 5 games, their point guard, and then, like, you know, they were playing a freshman there and Isaiah Thompson, and like getting Hunter back was supposed to like initiate the offense and give them another another way to create something other than just getting into Trevion Williams, and Hunter, you know, has kind of been a disaster factory himself.
Yes, he has.
So, you know, it maybe he's just not, you know, maybe it's hard for him to get going, and he'll turn it on by the time we play them in a couple of weeks. But, you know, that's been a problem for them. Aaron Wheeler is still completely broken.
Aaron Wheeler is just cursed. Whenever I see Aaron Wheeler get a bucket, I'm like, yes!
And the announcers are starting to do it, too, which is like, man, just treat it like a normal bucket, guys.
Yeah, but I'm like,
don't draw attention to this.
Please shoot. Please hit this. Please.
Speaking to the Eric Hunter disaster factory contention, his stat line from the Illinois game was 0 points on 0 for 6 shooting. 5 of those were inside the arc. 4 assists, 3 turnovers, an O rating of 25.
Yeah, and the other side of that coin is Illinois getting a solid but maybe uncomfortably close win. But I think if you go back to their free throw shooting, it explains most of it. So they're 9 of 22 from the free throw line. Coburn goes 0 of 6, and you're like, okay, the big can't hit free throws, but he's like a 70-plus guy most of the time. So I feel like this is just a blip, and that this was more like a 15-point victory than the 8 they actually got.
Yeah, if you watch this game, it did not feel particularly close.
Right.
And when you look, I mean, the main thing that jumps out to me from the box score is Illinois shooting 56% on twos and Purdue shooting 38%. And generally, if you got a gap that big, one team is pretty clearly superior.
It was a really strange kind of second half and also tail end of the first half. So Illinois ends the first half on a 10-0 run. Purdue comes out of the locker room on a 19-0 run. And there's a couple of back-and-forth possessions, and then Illinois goes on a 16-3 run right back at them. I missed the 19-0 run. I was doing something else. So my
same here, which probably colors my perception of how dominant Purdue was in this game a little bit, or Illinois was in this game. But down the stretch, it did not feel like this was a game between two teams that had relatively equal chances of winning.
Yeah, and you know, Trevion Williams is shooting 57% in Big Ten play. Turnover rate is 17. His assist rate is off the charts because he is an excellent passer. But I feel like a lot of teams that they have coming up on the schedule are going to be able to go one-on-one with Williams without him absolutely killing them. Like, we all remember the Teske game from last year, but that was just a bunch of circus shots falling, right? So, you know, I feel like if you're not going to double down on Williams, then that's probably the move, and you're able to get away with that, they're just going to not have enough offense to keep up with most of the teams that are headed for the tourney. I don't think Purdue's getting in this year. I just don't see enough wins in conference.
No, it's definitely a young team that they're bringing around. I also just want to mention a name so I can say that I mentioned it later, but keep an eye on freshman shooting guard Jaden Ivey. They started bringing him off the bench in the last few games. Very strong potential for a disaster factory guy of the future. You know, he's only getting 20% of minutes right now, but dude has missed almost every shot he's taken, and he is taking a shot almost every time he's gotten the ball.
Yeah,
so that's what you missed in that little period.
Those guys have a tendency to straighten it out a little. And then there's the KenPom top 25 team that nobody is talking about, Indiana.
coming off an 87-85 overtime victory against Penn State. That was Wednesday, so that was a little bit of a while ago. You know, I don't know how they're in the top 25. They got absolutely hammered by Texas, which does look a lot better these days. They lost to Florida State in overtime. Florida State is 32 in KenPom, so that's not amazing.
And that was a road game, so.
Yeah. I mean, they've done some things, I guess. That they're 6-4. You know, KenPom thinks they're headed for 9-11 in the league. Trace Jackson Davis is number 3 in the KenPom Player of the Year standings, which is a bit of a surprise to me because his O rating is not that high. So he's only shooting 54% from the field.
Yeah, but on 31% usage.
I know.
He's just insanely dominant on defense.
That's true.
To the point that KenPom probably underrates him.
That is true. And he also has a huge free throw rate. And then they have, you know, Franklin, who's shooting 48% from 3, and that's really their offense.
Yeah, and that's been the big difference for them is Armand Franklin coming out and basically being a 20-ish point per game scorer for them of late. And, I mean, he's hitting 50% of his threes in conference plays at 55% of his twos. And given their guard play recently, I mean, he's not passing the ball, like, at all. But
why would you?
That is a good question. Because, yeah, kickouts to Al Durham and Rob Vinicius do not necessarily produce much. Franklin and Jackson Davis kind of have to carry this team, but they seem to be doing a relatively decent job of it so far. I'll admit I need to watch more of this team to get a better feel for them.
Well, I mean, one thing that does stand out is if you close out and they get downhill on you, that can be a problem. So they shot 70% from 2 against Penn State. Penn State usually has pretty good perimeter defense, but, you know, Jackson Davis is 8-13 in the post, and John Harar is not containing that guy by himself, so Penn State's digging down, kick out to Indiana. You got a closeout to him, and even Jamari Wheeler on a closeout is liable to get blown past, and then Penn State was in a lot of trouble.
I knew that I had Indiana picked out as a regression candidate for a reason, and when clicking on conference-only stats, it quickly came back to mind why. They're getting pickpocketed at the highest rate in the Big Ten, steal rate of 10.6 for opponents, which is real dang high. And they're also getting the number one non-steal turnover percentage on defense, which is leading to them being number one in the conference in turnover rate defensively, even though they're only 5th in steals. And they're downright bad at every shooting category on both sides of the ball, except finishing twos on offense. So,
yeah,
I think this team's going to slip. All their peripheral stats do not look very good.
And I wanted to point out one thing from that game, which was I have a lot of Indiana follows and a lot of Penn State follows. Just for some reason, those are two fan bases that I know a lot of people in, and both of them were quite convinced that there was a complete conspiracy against them in this game. So,
what are the chances of that?
But it was, but it went to the overtime, and both of them were convinced that, like, they should have won by 10 points before that. So,
well, the thing about Franklin is he was not a major factor last year, so he is busted out from behind the arc, and I don't know if teams have really had a lot of opportunity to focus on shutting him down. So, and if you're able to shut down his three-point shooting, nobody else on this team shoots threes at a rate that scares you. Like, Finney's always been a terrible shooter. Jerome Hunter hasn't really done much. Like, you know, Galloway's a freshman, so we don't really have a whole lot of data on him, but he's 4-14 on the season.
Durham's a career 34%.
Yeah, so he's like a guy who's okay, scared, right? But if,
and they play two bigs. I mean, Race Thompson is not the hugest guy, but he's more of
he's a big. I think.
Yeah, he's attempted 6 threes all year. Yeah. he plays in the paint for the most part. So, I mean, this is a team that usually has a guy around the dunker spot because
there's nothing else to do.
Because there's no reason to stick them on the perimeter. They're not fooling anybody. So spacing is an idea. I don't love the ceiling for this team. They're still coached by Archie Miller, which hasn't portended good things recently. I don't know. They're 11th in offensive efficiency and 9th in defensive efficiency in the Big Ten, even though they haven't played the most brutal conference schedule. I mean, Northwestern and Penn State make up 2/3 of their games. So I think this is a team that slips.
I think the final game we'll cover in this segment is Iowa 77, Rutgers 75. One of the best games of the season so far. Really entertaining back-and-forth affair. Connor McCaffrey goes out after just 3 minutes, so we get a lot more of the Iowa bench than we usually do, and that bench steps up. So Keegan Murray goes for 14 points. He has 4 offensive rebounds, 3 blocks, 3 steals. He's a true freshman, 6'8", looks like a player. You get Patrick McCaffrey coming off the bench and getting a bucket, which is always kind of a emotional experience. And the strange thing about McCaffrey going out is Toussaint only gets 7 minutes in this game. And then Luka Garza doesn't really do a ton in the first half because Miles Johnson, who I'm developing a real, like, all Big Ten defensive team respect for, does a great job denying him post position. He ends up with 25 points because he's Luka Garza, because he has this run in the second half where he's unstoppable. But Rutgers really was able to kind of jam up the Iowa offense by not allowing Garza to dominate the ball, at least in the first half.
Yeah, this was more about Rutgers just not quite being able to generate enough points on offense in this game. They were missing Cliff Omorui, so they were a little thinner up front than they usually are. And also Ron Harper Jr. was coming back from a game missed due to injury and didn't totally look like himself. Takes more shots than he scores points in this game. And he's been tremendously efficient all year until this point. I mean, like we were saying earlier, he was on the KenPom Player of the Year list for most of the season until now. But what jumps out to me for the most part from Iowa over the last two games is that Bohannon's shot has come online. Yes. He was 6-for-9 against Rutgers on three-pointers and then 3-for-5 in this game. He's starting to take some more of those audacious attempts that we were used to seeing him hit in annoyingly critical situations in the past. I mean, he's been an anchor on that offense all year, and I've been largely advocating for them to play Toussaint over him because Toussaint plays defense, at least, even if he's a little bit of an explode-in-any-direction guy on offense. He also provides something off the bounce. But if Bohannon's going to shoot like this, then he needs to be playing 30 minutes a game, and Iowa's offense goes from terrifying to more terrifying.
Yeah, he has 6 two-pointers in Big Ten play, 6 two-point attempts. And he has 29 threes that he's hitting at a 45% clip. And as you noted, the degree of difficulty on those can be off the charts. So it looked like he wasn't back to his old self for the first, I don't know, 6 or 7 games of the season. And he kind of get a hint of it. He does decently against Purdue. And then the last two games, it's like, I hope that doesn't last.
Yeah, he was 1-for-7 in the game squeezed in between those three in the overtime loss against Minnesota. But yeah, it just, even in that game, you could tell that he was starting to get a little bit more confidence in his shot, I would say. And yeah, if he's playing like this, I was absolutely a contender to win the Big Ten. And I was a little skeptical about that because of their defense, even though their offense has been playing at a, you know, kind of bouncing back and forth between first and second in the country. But if Bohannon is shooting like this, they're a real contender.
Their defense is now 93rd in the country. It's green on KenPom. Like, I know it's, I mean, still not
93rd,
great for 10,
that is like beeline to deer. So that's pretty much
it's bad.
That's par for the course.
It's bad. Oh, it's bad. It's, I mean, it's the difference between 93rd and 150th is the difference between Iowa's a contender and Iowa's, you know, just a show.
Well, I'd just like to point out that on Torvik, their defense is 138th, and Torvik has seemed to be a little more reactive to results this season. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, the strange thing about watching this game is I was watching Rutgers play, and I was like, oh, they're probably going to find a decent shot on this possession. And they did.
They now have a better offense than defense by the advanced stats now.
Like, I think they were really hurt by, you know, Caleb McConnell was 0-4 from 2 in this game, and he had a couple bunnies. Like, they're generating good shots, and that's something that I don't think I've ever been able to say about Rutgers before.
They have the 17th ranked offense on KenPom right now, and that I assume is still with some preseason "we think you're Rutgers" baked in.
Yeah.
So.
Jeez.
That's pretty wild.
And you have to consider that, you know, they had that crazy game against Ohio State where their backup center is out and Miles Johnson fouls out 15 minutes in and they just go off a cliff. So honestly, I think they might be a little underrated right now.
Yeah, they missed Ron Harper for a little bit. I mean, you know, that's their best player. So yeah, I mean, Rutgers, I'm not ready to totally count them out as a team that could bounce back up into contention here. You know, getting saddled with two losses in your first five conference games, it might be tough to come back from just because of how good a few teams in this conference have looked, including Michigan. But you can get right back in this thing with a road win.
Yep. I lied. We should talk about Michigan State beating Nebraska by 7. This was a close game. Teddy Allen, you remember Teddy Allen, 23 points on 18 shot equivalents. Doesn't go to the foul line at all. This was a game where you saw Aaron Henry kind of get off the schneid. But part of that was the fact that he was able to get to the rim more and kind of get into a rhythm. And we saw him against Gabe Kalscher just be completely unable to get anywhere near the rim and just take a lot of bad shots. So I feel like Nebraska does not have that quality of defender. And if you're able to put, like, Franz Wagner on him, I don't think Aaron Henry is going to be able to turn in a KenPom MVP performance.
Yeah, that did not necessarily feel sustainable. And then you also get, I mean, the big change for Michigan State this week is Tom Izzo going, I was unfair to Rocket Watts by making him a point
and
guard.
And then benching him.
yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And yeah, I thought that was going to be like a smooth way to get him minutes at the two. And then instead, A.J. Hogard starts at the point, plays 23 minutes. Foster Lawyer gets 11 minutes off the bench. I thought Josh Lankford, who's been kind of a disaster this year on both ends, was going to get his time cut into. He plays 29 minutes, although he does score 15 points. So he at least provides a little bit of offensive punch for them. Still goes 1 for 5 from three. He still needs to step inside the arc to be at all reliable. But he at least perked up a little bit. But Watts only gets 15 minutes in this game. And you know, doesn't look very comfortable as a spot-up shooter, goes 1 for 4 from beyond the arc, is able to attack a couple closeouts and get some nice finishes, but it just seems like he does not have Izzo's trust right now, and I don't know who does necessarily. Thomas Kithier?
Joey Hauser.
I mean, there's a reason that he's playing, and that's because he has Izzo's trust. Now, why is up for debate.
He really scraps for offensive rebounds.
He does. That is something that he does very well at.
I assume he does well in the drills where they put on football pads.
He said that they're not allowed anymore during one of his Society is Soft rants.
Yeah, that's probably an NCAA rule that he's circumvented and just has to say that. in this game, Marcus Bingham and Julius Marble basically do not play. Matty Sissoko nearly puts up a trillion in 7 minutes. Does get 2 blocks, but this is Nebraska.
Two blocks in 7 minutes is like a game changer for this defense, though.
Yeah, but then they pull him off the court because 2 blocks against Nebraska is the equivalent of like 0.2 blocks against a real team. So,
well, I mean, I don't know. I would be exploring his upside a little bit more than
I probably would too. But you know, he does nothing on the offensive end for them in those 7 minutes. You do get Kithier going 3 for 3 from the field after 3 offensive rebounds. That might be correlated. But I don't know. They were in a competitive game against Nebraska in Aaron Henry's like easily his best game of the season. So I don't know what you do with that if you're Michigan State, because I don't think there's a lot that you're going to take out of that necessarily. This didn't even count as a B-quality game on KenPom.
Yep. So they've got Rutgers up next. They are predicted to lose by 1 point.
Which means they must be at home.
Yeah.
They are at home.
Pomeroy wrote something in the, I think it was a couple weeks ago, he wrote something in The Athletic about how he tried to gauge what the home court advantage was going to be, and he basically made it 60% of what it normally is, and it's been not that.
That is really interesting. I'm going to be interested to see how this works out after the season's over, how much of the home crowd advantage is actually having a crowd.
Expand the student section. I do want to know before we move on from Michigan State that in their remaining Big Ten games, of which there are 16, they are favored to win on KenPom in 3 of them.
All right. Well, if I was Dave Revson and Robbie Hummel, I'd be like, whoa. But I'm not, so I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
They are Michigan's only 75% plus to win all season left on their schedule.
Now that is a fun fact. I enjoyed that.
There we go. Well done. All right. Well, that's it for us. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I am Mace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. Soup. The word of the day is soup.
All right, so we need a hot take. We forgot our hot takes.
Oh, yeah.
The siren song of the reminder for hot takes is
Oh, I want to do something about MSC basketball, but I do not want to tempt fate too much.
I mean, I already did one, right? Like, I said that they would be playing in the
yeah,
first...
Yeah, you already did. That's right.
So... if it goes pear-shaped, you can always blame me.